Welcome aboard this Jumpcast service. We are going to be calling at, bear with me, we're going to be calling at the big news of the week, the trailers and reviews of Prey, Not Okay, 13 Lives, and of course Bullet Train, hence this tortured bit. And we will be terminating at a fun game this evening. Joining me on this fun old train of Jumpcast is, as ever, my esteemed co-hosts, terrible grammar, Alex Gilston.
Hello!
Hello! And Charlotte Harrison.
Ahoy.
Ahoy! Man, it's been 2 weeks. We've taken a little bit of a summer break. I think that's fair enough. It's August. Everyone should be allowed to cut loose a bit. So, we are back, though. We are doing our usual thing. And, well, we should probably check in. So, Charlotte, how are you doing?
I'm 2 and a bit weeks into my summer holidays, so life is good.
Life is good. And you've been across islands.
Yeah, I went island hopping in Greece for a week. I went to Santorini, Mykonos, Tinos, Delos, and Athens.
Oh, wonderful.
Not going to lie, though, one of my favourite moments was in our hotel room watching Hercules and doing a sing-along.
I was going to say, I was hoping that you'd end up to the Mamma Mia Island or something.
Which isn't actually in Greece.
Okay, hang on a second. I need a moment because I feel like my worldview has just been turned upside down. Okay, I'm over it.
It feels like Greece, but...
Okay. But it's not.
I did think about recreating that Lay All Your Love on Me on the beach very briefly. I was like, oh yeah, but I don't know how to swim, so no.
Oh, okay. As I said, I've been a very brief recreation. Oh no. Okay. Well, it's good to have you back, Charlotte.
Good to be back.
Nice. And Alex, how about yourself? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I can't say I've left the country and come back in the time that we've been away, but I did leave this mortal realm.
What?
To land myself in Chromatica.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
To watch Lady Gaga a couple of weeks ago.
Was that in London or was
it
that
was,
in Manchester?
Yeah, London. Lady Gaga really said, I'm only going to do 5 European dates and that's your lot, okay?
Oh. Did you go to the third floor orgy?
No. no, but I did hear about it. But yes, it was very fun, very good. Lady Gaga is... impeccable. I mean, amazing.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's so good. You know, I won't harbour any resentment about the fact that you were in London and made no mention of it, but you know, it's fine.
It was a quick old trip and we were so busy. It's just completely wall to wall. We went to that, me and my friend went to the TikTok viral ice cream shop.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was a weird thing. Because it's for people who don't know,
me basically
for you no for idea. People who yeah. don't know, this is a place in London that's like it's like a summer installation, and it's a bunch of different ice cream flavors based off the person who curated the flavors, her favorite cult food brands.
Okay,
so you've got really interesting flavors. Some ones being like Cocoa Pops, Frosties, Bird's Custard Powder. I'm trying to think of the other normal ones. That's about as far as it goes. There's porridge and rice pudding, like Quaker Oats porridge.
Okay.
And then there's the weird ones like soya sauce, Worcestershire sauce, ketchup, salad cream, HP sauce, mayonnaise, all ice cream.
Why would you do that?
I don't know.
You sound like, why would someone commit murder? Why would you do that?
I'm not saying I'm cross, but...
But me and my friend committed to get one normal flavour and one silly flavor. So I got bird's custard powder and tomato ketchup.
Okay.
The bird's custard powder was so lovely. Very nice. Very, very nice. The ketchup, on the other hand, yeah.
Well, I, for one, am shocked.
I don't want to be that person that says it just tasted like somebody squirted tomato ketchup into a bottle of milk, but that is kind of what it tasted like.
Well,
I'm not a very tomato-y person either, so that's...
Yeah, no. That's not all that shocking. I'm not going to lie.
No, not in any... Although my friend did get Heinz baked beans, and he said that that was... surprisingly nice.
What is wrong with no? I
don't know what that
to...
says. If that says more about him than it does about the you know
garlic
the people making
bread.
The flavors, but
garlic bread,
cheese cake.
Okay, didn't ask for this discrimination based on, my, based on where I'm located here in the country. And if you're out there listening, Peter, you're an icon. Don't let these guys bully you.
Oh, no. Hey, I've got love for Max and Paddy.
Oh, just Max and Paddy. Okay.
Well,
wow.
The rest of the Phoenix Lakes crew as well, you know.
Geraldine
is the best thing that Peter Kay has ever done. And Tarsha.
But... good. Yeah. But also Phoenix Knights. Let's not beat around the bush.
Yeah, fair. Anyway, we should probably get back on topic before we start talking about Peter Kay for five years.
Yeah, what are we doing this one again? I have no idea. Cool. Well, before we get onto our usual bits and pieces, the news, trailer talk, and reviews and whatnot, as is custom on this podcast, we normally check in on top of, you know, our personal lives, and ourselves to, you know, see what we've been watching. So I'm going to start again with Charlotte. What's caught your eye?
The thing I'm really pushing to recommend people is The Newsreader, Lucy iPlayer, Australian drama, 6 episodes, like 50 minutes long. It's Melbourne, 1986, and it follows a daily news team as they go about their shenanigans off screen and on screen. What I find really interesting, it was like episode 3, they made a choice where it went from a really good show to like a really quite profound show. Within that time period, like I know we talk about now, we live in unprecedented times and we're sick of being in unprecedented times and being unprecedented times. But within this months-long window, they had Chernobyl, the AIDS crisis, the Challenger explosion, Fergie's wedding. Just, they were quite huge, significant things in this short period of time. It was quite a nice reminder. And the other thing I want to recommend is I'm rewatching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend at the moment. And it's so good. If you like musicals, you like your dramas about people with mental health problems, the Venn diagram there.
I do like both of those things. And I have heard one of the songs from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the one about cats.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. It's not the best one. There's Ooh. Oh My God, I Really Like You. And the opening verse is... You've been tearing me up for a week and a half. I don't mean like in my heart. I mean physically you've been tearing me up. It's D-Day in my lady parts.
Oh, and he said romance is dead. No, that's awesome. Okay, yeah, I have to check those out. Thank you, Charlotte. Alex, what about yourself?
Well, first of all, before I make my recommendation... I know we're not going to talk about it properly, but last week, actually, when I was in London, I went to the Leicester Square 4DX to watch DC League of Super Pets.
Okay.
And it was the first time I'd ever done 4DX.
What did you think?
Yeah, it was a whole experience. it's super weird because, like, not only do you get like basically thrown around like you're on a roller coaster in the action sequences, in which DC League of Super Pets there were quite a few. Even just when it's like a scene where two characters are talking to each other and one of them's moving around, the chairs like lean to the left or the right a little bit, and it's like it's very strange.
Did it have the TikTok advert during the
It did.
Adverts?
Funnily enough, that scares me. I recorded myself because it was like, yeah, this you get your phones out, record. So I was like, okay. And I was like, what is going on?
You're holding your popcorn for dear life.
I took a full drink in and I was like, is this drink going to be okay or is it going to spill everywhere? But yeah, it was very fun. I think I would do it again. Not for a film. Yeah, it'd have to be a big action film though, wouldn't it? Otherwise, what's the point?
Venom 2 was a lot of fun in 4DX. Lightyear, not.
Oh. Yeah, you don't want to feel like you're being thrown up into space in a rocket. Really, I suppose. Mm. Anyway, as for my main recommendation, I have absolutely just pile-drived through Hacks, which is on Prime here in the UK or HBO Max in America. Oh my gosh, it is so brilliant. I'd heard so many wonderful things about it from people I follow on Twitter anyway, and I'd seen that it had won a bunch of Emmys. At the time, very begrudging of the fact that it had won Emmys over shows that I was kind of really hyper-fixated on at that point in time. I was like, oh, why is this silly show winning Emmys? Oh, why is my favourite show not winning it? But I take all of those words back now because it very truly does deserve to win Emmys because of how wonderful it is. And if you haven't seen it, it's two series, like 10 and 8 episodes, and they're like half an hour long, and it's just hilarious. It's got some wonderful character development over the two series. It's just brilliant.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. As for me, honestly, not a whole lot to report back. I tell you what I have been watching, though, which has been astonishing, is the show This Is My House.
Oh, I can't that show.
It's just... So for those of you not in the loop on this, essentially what it is, it's a panel of four celebrities, including Richard Madeley. I know, but hear me out.
Oof.
Yeah. I know. Have to guess who of four people is the real person of the subject of that week. So essentially they have four people, let's say, all called Stephen, for instance. They're all called Stephen. They're all the same person, Stephen, but one of them is the real Stephen. And they have to convince this panel that they are the real person, but also the other actors are trying to convince them as well. And it is just the most chaotic thing I think I've ever seen. It's just, like, so passive-aggressive on the actors, well, on the contestants' front, on the collective Stevens, or, you know, whatever else they're going to be called. And... yeah, they're basically taken around the real person's life and they have to just kind of fake it till they make it.
They meet family members, don't they? And that's when my cringe level just hits the top.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they'll meet family or friends and they'll all have these different narratives of how they know each other and how, like, these wonderful anecdotes that they'll each exchange and that kind of thing. And the relatives or friends can't react. They can't respond. So they're just sitting there stony-faced while this person's talking about how much, like, this person means to them and all these, like, oh, do you remember when we went to Spain and did this and that kind of thing? And it's just bonkers. And, like, just watching people react to it is hilarious. And yeah, I can't get enough. Like, it's pure garbage, but it's so fun. And on that note, pure garbage, we get straight into the news. And, oh, oh boy, yeah, start on a high. So, as no doubt so many of you will have seen and heard, basically Warner Brothers is going through a bit of a shift with its contents. Yeah, with its contents. As the new CEO, David Zaslav, has come in and essentially gutted Warner Brothers and HBO of a lot of upcoming projects, and some of them have been received a bit less welcome than others, namely the Batgirl news. But in the wake of this, and with the insistence from the Warner Brothers board that The Flash is carrying on, and that it looks amazing, etc., etc., its lead, Ezra Miller, has been charged with felony burglary. among other things, you know, that, I mean, not charged with other things, but they have obviously been in the public eye with so much going on. So my question to you guys, can this film even happen? What is going on here?
I mean, they released Death on the Nile.
So true.
Yes. Yes, that is admittedly very true.
The timing, there are lots of things like to discuss here. A, the fact that Ezra Miller has been caught up in lots of problematic things for a while now, haven't they? And nothing seems to have been done, or they're not accepting help, which I guess are two different things. Compounded with the Batgirl news, I don't envy anyone at Warner Brothers right now.
It's a weird old time. And when you hear about all their plans for their different platforms and what they want to do with like Discovery and kind of gendering bits and pieces as well, like, you know, HBO is for the boys apparently, and Discovery is for the girlies.
No, like, I'll have you know, HBO Max is for the girls, gays, and theys. So
yeah,
contrary to popular belief,
which is why the board of old white straight men that David Zaslav has brought in have sought to, completely eradicate anything HBO Max related, because it's just too radical for them to have anything that isn't goddamn Game of Thrones or whatever. Anyway, yeah, it's a mess. Something that doesn't seem a mess, though, well, to some happier news, Jeff Nichols has a new film upcoming, and they've started confirming some cast. So Deadline has reported that Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy are going to be leading up the cast for The Bike Riders. So this is a film set in the 60s, around a fictional motorcycle club, and basically watching it grow and evolve, and following the following the members of the club, and watching them see it grow and change. Are we excited for a new Jeff Nichols joint, Charlotte?
Yeah, I mean, his success rate is phenomenal, right? To make films that are so intimate and different. Midnight Special was a really magical experience watching that film. To the point, I haven't rewatched it since seeing it at a cinema, purely because it was just so of that moment. That cast is great, and the story really intriguing, because it doesn't sound like something you'd think Jeff Nichols would do at first thought. And you're like, well, I need to see what he's going to do with it.
Let's say, yeah, I am fascinated. Alex, do you share our feelings on this?
I mean, you bring a cast like that together, well, a leading cast like that together, and you have my interest. But
for sure,
I cannot say that I have any experience with any of Jeff Nichols' previous films. So,
well, in that case, yeah, definitely recommend Midnight Special alongside Charlotte there. And Mud as well is very, very good. So yeah, for those to start with, I think you'd be on good ground. But yeah, very excited to see how that pans out. Well, in terms of things that I'm excited for, guys, I am very, very excited for this news. So we had heard that Joker 2, Folie à Deux, had been written. We knew that there was a script out there, and we knew that there were rumours and rumblings of a certain lady joining Joaquin Phoenix. And sure enough, there was a teaser video which came out this week, maybe the week just gone, with Lady Gaga and Joaquin Phoenix dancing cheek to cheek, as it were.
Oh.
In the... face to face, Alex. They're not like...
Yeah, I know. No.
They're not Requiem for a Dreaming It. Well, as far as we know. God. Oh, dear. But yeah, Joker Folie à Deux, Lady Gaga and Joaquin Phoenix. So it almost feels certain that the rumours that this is going to be a musical are coming to fruition. Alex, I can already tell that you're excited for this. Fresh off of the Chromatica ball.
Oh, golly gosh. It's no secret that I am really not a fan of Joker. I'm not a fan of Todd Phillips or his screenwriting or his directing. The only good things about Joker are Joaquin Phoenix and Hilda Gundadotter's score. So when this film first got announced with no connection to Gaga, I was like, nah. Why? Get it in the bin. But the rumours came out and I was like, oh, God damn it. God damn it. And then obviously she posted on Twitter the little teaser thing. And I was like, right, this is so homophobic. This is really unfair. That I am going to be forced to be sat in a cinema screen day one, watching a sequel to a film that I generally despise, because she is in it and singing songs and being generally iconic.
So you're optimistic?
No, absolutely not. For her, yes, of course, any day. Of course. But for everything else, absolutely not.
Oh dear. Well, Alex, I'm going to try and boost your enthusiasm. I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. I did not like Joker at all. But everything I've heard about Joker 2 just sounds like, you know what? I think they might be onto something here.
What I will say is that it's so amazing that that Joker has kind of become the, or at least what I've seen people say, it's kind of become a film that's part of the incel guidebook. And just seeing people who are part of that group or just toxic film bros reacting to the fact that it's going to be a musical with Lady Gaga in it, it does make me happy.
Yeah. So do you think if they do follow through and make this a musical, that it'll be We Live in a High Society? Oh, God. Charlotte, I'm going to come to you now on this. Where do you lie on this one? Are you more in Alex's camp or more with me on the optimism and enthusiasm for Joker Folie à Deux?
When I saw the tweet, I went, for fuck's sake. Sorry, Alex.
Well, you can't say fairer than that. Cool, well. Let's move on. So, some interesting rumblings over at Neon, the distributor that gave us Parasite and his and Portrait of a Lady on Fire, Spencer, Flea, The Worst Person in the World. I could go on, because whilst they've got a decent upcoming slate, including Triangle of Sadness, which won the Palme d'Or, and Crimes of the Future, David Cronenberg's upcoming film, they seem to be looking for a buyer. It's at the moment, it looks like it's in the wake of A24 getting some nice valuations and a nice kind of injection of money. So hopefully this means that Neon is just looking to go to another strength. But how do we feel about this, guys? Alex, what are your thoughts on Neon putting up the for sale signs?
I feel like it's hard to say until we find out who it's going to be that eventually buys them out. Because, like, everything that Neon have touched and is touching recently just is pure gold. And, like, it's kind of crazy. I don't think there are many other production companies, distribution companies that have as good of a run as Neon have had.
Yeah, it's been... Sorry, go on.
Like, in terms of just everything, like, especially when it comes to awards and things like that. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things, isn't it, where it's just a nice thing that is on its own, just thriving and being cool, and it's just going to get eaten up by the system, and it just makes me a bit sad.
There's not much optimism coming from you, Alex. Are you okay? Is everything all right?
I'm really sad. No, I'm joking. I don't know. These are just really, like, non-optimistic stories today. I don't know. When we get to the reviews, I'll be more positive. It's fine.
Okay, okay. Well, hold on to that. Charlotte, how about you, though? How do you feel about the news that Neon may be going to the highest bidder?
I'm dubious. Mainly because it feels like with recent buyouts, we're heading back towards the kind of oligarchy of the 1940s. The five big studios. It feels like we're kind of heading on that path.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And yeah, it doesn't bode well. God, I really hope... I just hope that whatever comes of this, that Neon is allowed to operate the way it has done. And hopefully it's just growth. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to get optimistic, like Alex said, in terms of the news lately. But there is something which we can all hold on to. And that's big news over at Disney. Speaking of monopolies and studios dominating. No. So it's been a while, but let's jump on into speculation corner. Ooh. So in the wake of heaps of announcements of franchise continuities and refreshes and phases and whatever, so Patton Oswalt, who is basically, if there's a thing that's based on a comic book or has even looked at the graphic novel section of your favorite bookstore, he's involved. And he's, I guess, a reliable source in that regard. And he seems to be of the understanding, or at least of the knowing, that Eternals 2 with Chloe Zhao is going to be something that we will be having in our lifetime. Now, Alex, you were a very big fan of Eternals.
Indeed I was, yes.
So, are you holding out for some Patton Oswalt truths here?
I am holding out for it. However, I'm gonna be the very thing you swore for me not to be and continue to be glass half empty and okay. Say that I don't think he has a clue. Personally. I think people like Patton Oswalt and just, I suppose, actors that are part of anything big like Marvel or whatever these days just kind of say things maybe like off the cuff, or that they don't like mean to say it, or they're just kind of going, oh, I hope. And then news outlets will be like, it's happening. and I feel like this is maybe an example of that. But I think we might have some more solid ground to move on in terms of an Eternals sequel come D23 next month. So my fingers are still crossed.
I have every confidence we'll be sharing all the updates as we hear them in terms of the big franchise stuff, because that's what gets the clicks and the listeners. So yeah, I'm sure you'll be along for that ride. But Charlotte, in terms of Eternals 2 rumours, speculation, is it something you'd be excited to catch?
Yeah, so he dropped this during a podcast recording, and I love the fact that someone who listened to it told someone else who told someone else who then became news.
Yeah.
You said about Patton Oswalt being like adjacent to all his comic books. Can we give him a shout out for his take as Matthew the Raven in The Sandman, which he's really wonderful as that voice?
Ooh.
I hope Eternals 2 happens. Hearing this news reminded me of how much I enjoyed the first Eternals and how many threads have been left to be picked up again. Because it kind of worked as a standalone, but it's aching for continuation of some of those plot points.
Oh yeah, like with Cersei being plucked out of Hampstead Heath by an absolute massive celestial.
Mm-hmm. And Kingo and Fastos as well. They both got taken with her.
Oh, they did? You're right. Yeah.
And also Black Knight. Well, we don't officially know that. No. But Kit Harington's character, at least.
Yeah. Kit Harington's character, who shall remain completely unremarkable, we promise. Definitely haven't booked him for multiple films for any particular reason.
No, not at all. Definitely won't be seeing him pop up in the upcoming Blade reboot or anything like that. Nah.
Yeah, Blade.
Blade. and yeah, definitely won't play a major role in either Avengers film to come.
No,
definitely not. No, that person is not significant to the Avengers at all. But I'm sure time will tell. Anyway, enough of that. Enough of that news. Let's move on to happier things with the sparse but full of quality trailer talk. So, we start with a trailer that Alex is choosing not to see.
Yes. I hope that you respect my decision. Thank you.
Which we will respect that decision. And so, Alex, feel free to fingers and ears, whatnot. I mean, we'll touch on it briefly. So, we mentioned it briefly during the news, but Palme d'Or winner Triangle of Sadness has its general release coming, and it's coming in the next couple of months. And sure enough, we have a trailer to accompany. And I had to say, this looks quite fun, quite scathing in many ways. Charlotte, what are your takes on what we've seen so far from this?
When I was on holiday, there was this cruise ship that, for the first couple of islands, were quite touristy. This cruise ship was like following us on our journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I did then spend more time than I've really thought about cruise ships and how they work and how they operate. And obviously, to varying degrees, the kind of entitlement and what's provided on the cruise ships. Watching this trailer and watching it go wrong, I found quite delicious.
Okay. And this is coming from someone who is an avid follower of Below Deck.
Yeah.
I say, life has become very cruise ship centric for Charlotte, it sounds like.
I'm just saying, I'm the pulse. I'm not on the pulse, on the pulse.
Oh gosh. But yeah, no, I am fascinated. And yeah, clearly it is working for a lot of people, given its accolades already going into, well, the end of the year. So we'll see how that fares, and hopefully it's plain sailing.
Hey.
All right, Alex, you can come back to us now.
Hello, I'm here.
Hello. Cool. So we are going from the luxury of the cruise ship to the slightly sparse but fairly beautiful Irish landscape of the, I'm going to say, the 18th century, with the Banshees of Inisherin. So it's...
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to say... guessing. But we have... Okay, brace yourselves here. We've got Martin McDonagh, we've got Brendan Gleeson, and we've got Colin Farrell. Yeah, baby. So, basically we have Brendan Gleeson as a man who has decided to not talk to his friend of some time, Colin Farrell. And the trailer has not given any clues or indicators to what's going on or why that might be. But all I know is I will be there day one. Alex, since you were absent for the Triangle of Sadness, I'm going to come straight to you first on this. What were your feelings towards what you've seen so far of the Banshees of Inisherin?
Well, I really, from watching the trailer, all I got was vibes. Just kind of vibes. But I, like probably everybody else, is very happy to see an In Bruges reunion. Very good to see them both back together on screen together. Barry Keoghan, of course. I'll take him in anything. But I've just read the synopsis for the film, and now everything makes sense.
Okay.
I don't know whether to say it, but because it might give things away for people who don't want to know.
Okay, yeah, we'll hold off on that. If people want to check it out, they can check it out. Charlotte, what about yourself?
What I really like about Martin McDonagh's films.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Is that it's a concept, like a really simple concept, but really expanded and explored. The idea of like you just rocking up to the pub to chat with your mate and they're not speaking to you. Particularly male friendship as well. I'm fascinated to see where that's gonna go. And with actors of that caliber as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel like Martin McDonagh has certainly, well, justifiably over the films and on stage, kind of cultivated this real respect and what's the word I'm trying to think of here? Like a cachet, that's the one. Mm. As a director and a writer. So yeah, I'm not surprised that people are clamoring to work with him. And when you've got people like Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell who have, you know, made such fun and brilliant films with him in the past, like In Bruges and like Seven Psychopaths, yeah, I'm intrigued, definitely. Alrighty, so moving on to our last trailer before we get cracking on to the reviews and things after that. We have a Netflix film. I know, but hear me out. This one actually looks quite good. This is a high school-ish revenge comedy drama called, aptly, Do Revenge. So this has in the lead roles Camila Mendes and Maya Hawke, who are two young women who are wronged by certain parties in their social circle and see to it that vengeance is swift. I'm sure hilarity will ensue. It already looked like that from the trailer. So, Charlotte, from what you've seen so far of Do Revenge, are you excited for this?
The more of these kind of trailers I see, the more I become like that meme of the angry man who shouts at cloud, but I'm the angry millennial who shouts at the cloud. Because really, I feel like these films would be better if they were set at college. The lead actresses are 28 and 23 apiece, and they're playing high schoolers. I understand from a logistics point of view why older actors play high schoolers, because you've got filming restrictions for actual teenagers on set.
Mm.
But I feel like there's more to be had, more to be explored with college age than there is at high school. Maybe I say that as a teacher of high school equivalent. The visuals look interesting, that kind of hyper-stylized. I feel like the plot would be enhanced if it was at college.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There is a weird disconnect there. But yeah, that's... Yeah, that is a good point. Alex, how about yourself in terms of Do Revenge? What are your thoughts, feelings, opinions?
Yeah, it looks interesting enough, I think. I'm here for a girl boss moment, and hopefully it isn't a I accidentally girl boss too close to the sun, but more of a just like a yeah, let's go get them, ruining men's lives. Yes.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see. Well, we'll have to wait and really dig and find out for ourselves, because no doubt this film will be released, and it being Netflix, no one will have a first damn clue of when it actually comes out. So...
Oh no, we will, because it'll be the most watched film on Netflix.
Oh, that's right.
All the territories.
Yeah, but they haven't spent like $300 million on it, so they won't be...
Yeah, of course. It might be like number 3 or 4 then.
It'll be under the Kissing Booth 27 or whatever it is. All right, well... Brief moment of film snobbery for me. That was trailer talk. So before we crack on with the reviews, we have our usual thanks to give. And this week, well, who fancies it?
I mean, if I can find it.
Ooh. I do like the added jeopardy in this. And
can we
find the list of a dozen or so names?
Yeah, you would have thought that I'd have it on hand a lot easier than I do.
I mean... After a year, I don't think we've actually brought this up.
No, we haven't. So you can do that while I look for it now.
Cool. Well, as we get the bit that lets us kind of transition from one thing to the next. Yeah, it's been a whole year since Alex, Charlotte and I took the reins of Jumpcast. And I know I wasn't going to get mushy. I told myself I wasn't going to cry. but no, it has been an absolute pleasure, and you know, as long as we are allowed to carry on sullying the good name of Jumpcast, then I am, you know, absolutely delighted to be doing it with you guys. So I don't know how you feel. I'm hoping the same. God, now I've said that.
Oh no, I absolutely hate you, Simon. Can't wait to jump ship. No, I'm just
waited to the anniversary one. Yeah, we're doing
the 50th. Like a handwritten note.
Not even a note, a post-it. It'd be like in The Simpsons, except it'd be Guess Who Hates You. Oh, God. Well, Thank you, Alex.
Of course, I don't mean it. It has been an absolute pleasure to do this with the both of you, and for as long as we can do it into the future, I am I'm very happy. Contrary to the rest of this episode of the podcast.
And yes, Charlotte, happy 1 year as well.
Yeah, happy anniversary, both of you. It's a treat. I can't think. I was thinking of like a quote, but I can't think of one. It's been a treat.
It has been a treat. And long may it continue, definitely.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. Alex, where are we with the list?
Oh, it's here. We've Thank got God. It.
Okay.
We've got
okay. I've filled it for long enough. Do what you must.
So every week we take some time out to thank all the wonderful people who support the Jump Cut Online Patreon. So if you are on this list, then you're about to hear your name, and we are forever thankful for your support. So thank you very much to Chris Wilson, Enon Films, Robert Denny, Daryl Griffiths, Sam Luck, Ola Smith, Peter Hodgkins, Andy Meakin, Fabiana Rosas, Hamish Calver, Manuel Bento, and Joe Craig. Thank you.
Beautiful. After a year of doing that, we've still got it. The thank you for Wow. 50 episodes, eh? Who would have thought? Cool. So let's crack on with the meat. We've had the veg. We've made our way through that bit of the plate. Now we've got the good stuff. So, well, where to start? But with the big film of... Well, there's a very stream-heavy release window, it feels like. And we're going to start with a Disney Plus film. And, well, it feels strange for it to be a Disney Plus film. It's Star, of course. And we're going big. We're going 300 years ago. And we're going hunters hunting hunters. It's Prey, the styled prequel to the Predator franchise. Spoiler alert, if you didn't know that already, it's a Predator film. And so yes, it takes a hero who is a young woman from a Comanche group who wants to prove herself as a hunter, who is consigned by her society to be the traditional female role, and all of that is turned upside down when an alien hunter comes to land for a bit of sport. So, Alex, what did you think of Prey?
Well, I want to preface this with the fact that I have never seen a Predator film before, not even the original with Mr. Arnie himself. I don't know why I've never seen a Predator film. I mean, I hadn't even really seen the first Alien until lockdown. So, you know, I'm behind on everything. You should know this by now if we've been doing this for a year. Every episode, it's on the bingo card. I haven't seen this. I haven't seen that. So you shouldn't be surprised. but yeah, so I had kind of no expectations about it. Obviously, I know what Predator is. It's, you know, speaks for itself. So I kind of knew almost what to expect in a sense, in terms of the Predator side of things. But yeah, from the perspective of somebody who doesn't have the baggage of the rest of the films to go off, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was very, very good. I think it was, you know, a really interesting story, and made even more interesting by the fact that it was led by a woman as well, especially in the you know, when it is set as well. I think maybe some of the scenes where the male members of the tribe were kind of goading at her because she's a woman, and oh, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that because you're a woman, kind of thing, felt a little bit on the cliche side of things. I understand that obviously it's like they have to try and illustrate the fact that nobody believes in her and that's what she's trying to prove, but I felt like it was just a bit kind of, we get it in a way. But I I thought the action was brilliant. I think the sequences, especially where it was just her and the Predator, that last sequence as well, where kind of everything came together, was really, really quite well done. I thought there was a few little bits of dodgy CGI here and there, but it was, for the most part, it was pretty good. I thought it was sufficiently gory. There was a few deaths where I kind of went, okay. Mm. And yeah, I think overall I was fairly impressed by it. And I don't know what the idea is of whether they are wanting to continue Naru's story or whether that's kind of that done now. But I don't think I would be mad if there was a continuation of the story at all.
In the closing credits, there's a hint there's going to be a sequel.
Oh, okay.
It does, yeah.
Ah, I may have missed that then.
Let's say that is a good PSA for people who are watching on at home. Is, yeah, stay through the cave painting credits because, yeah, there are suggestions.
Okay, in that case, bring it on. I think that'll be very good. And yeah, Amber Mid-Thunder was also brilliant in the main role. She was very good.
Great. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, Alex. Charlotte, I'm going to come to you and I actually have a little bit of correspondence.
Ooh. To continue what Alex mentioned about bingo cards, this is my bingo comment. It was really great to see a female, strong female character in the lead. Because it was. But fundamentally, it was the concept was so good in the sense that you like, okay, fair enough, it's set in the 1700s, follows these Native Americans. Okay, female character. And then stuff is revealed and you kind of forget stuff about the time period. That really brings home how incredible his concept is of bringing this highly intelligent, advanced life force into Earth at that time period. The fact they've not seen electronics before, whereas most other Predator films or Alien films, that's a part of it. It's a science fiction film in that sense. Whereas this was a science fiction film where things, you know, are less advanced technology-wise, but also the reliance on medicine from nature and that kind of thing. I thought it was so smart. And it's such a shame that it's gone straight to Disney Plus. While I hope it means it's going to have more people watching it, the experience of seeing us on the big screen, I feel like I really missed out.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's such a shame that Disney or whoever didn't have the confidence to send this into the big screen because... yeah, this would have easily found its audience and then some. Like, I've been saying over the last couple of weeks, you know, on here and in other places about how this summer especially feels so just bereft of big tentpole films at the cinema. Mm. And yeah, with like so much of the rhetoric from people being like, go to the cinema, see the big screen experience, do what you can to go to the cinema, support your cinema. Like, they're not walking the walk. They are not giving cinemas the films to actually say, hey, we have this variety here to go and experience. And this would have been a prime example. This would have been a perfect thing to be like, cool, it's a big, bloody action sci-fi horror. Go check it out. And yeah, instead it's paid dust on Disney Plus, which is like you said, it'll get views, but... It has lost something, sadly, there. And that's not to the film's that's not the film's fault, and it's not to the film's detriment. The film, I thought, was phenomenal. I loved it. I thought that Amber Mid-Thunder is just sensational in that role. I think that the way, like you say, Charlotte, the way the story kind of peels back and goes, oh yeah, by the way, this is 1700s America. You just go, oh yes, those things are also happening, and then and then when other parties come into it, you do kind of go, oh wow, okay, how are they going to play with this? And it is a testament not only to the actors on screen and, you know, the majority of the crew, but Dan Trachtenberg, especially, like, from this and his work on 10 Cloverfield Lane, he is at the top of his game in terms of taking, you know, we are in a world now where, you know, in cinema and, you know, the real world, where franchise and IP is king. And I think if you have a filmmaker like Dan Trachtenberg who is going to take risks, who is going to want to tell a story that is interesting and, you know, a fresh spin and something different, while still kowtowing to the franchise obligations, I think just give the man everything. Like, he's got an eye. He really does. Which leads me to the correspondence. So every week on our Twitter page, so it's at @jumpcast_, we put a call out for your say on the big releases that we're going to be covering. And this week was no different. And the response was, well, much more than we normally get. Let's just say that. So we've got a couple here talking about Prey. So we'll start with Paul Tams @Paul_Tams1, who says, Prey was a Dark Horse Predator comic book brought to life. An answer to what fans have been clamoring for since the 90s, and Dan Trachtenberg listened. Mm-hmm. And we also have this from Russell Bailey @RussLovesMovies, who's also commented another film we'll be coming to, who said, Prey, a remarkably good Predator film, stripped back, propulsive action flick with a terrific lead performance. It's a hit. It's a success. And I think it's, especially, like, Alex, I'd be interested to see your thoughts on the original Predator, especially because a lot of people, you know, well, wouldn't normally give them the time of day, let's be honest, those types, who have said, you know, come out against the film for whatever reason. And I just want to say, like, this makes a really good companion piece to the original, because that one was so much about machismo and the whole masculinity and big biceps and everything else. And then just being, and that being completely dashed aside, almost kind of pathetically, for, you know, how to actually survive these things. And so, yeah, I'd be interested to see how you come to the first Predator, especially in the wake of Prey. I'm not saying I'm setting you homework, but...
but you are.
A little bit. All right, well, that was Prey. And so we move on to 13 Lives. This is the new Ron Howard movie based on the true story of the cave-in and subsequent rescue of 12 boys in Thailand and their football coach. Now, I just want to get a good measure of who's seen this and who hasn't. So I have. Alex, you've not?
I've not, no.
No. And Charlotte, have you had a chance to see this?
I haven't either.
Okay, great. No pressure then. So it's just me. Okay, cool. So in that case, so what we'll say going into this is that there is a documentary called The Rescue, which covers this and the whole story in 90 minutes. And it is made by the same people who made Free Solo. Am I right in remembering
that?
Correct. Yes, I am remembering that correctly. Good. I'm not just making things up. Relief. So this film is 2.5 hours. And so, yeah, Ron Howard directing. And so this is an MGM film. And I think, I'm not sure if this is something that just got picked up when Amazon acquired MGM back in... In fact, yes, so I'm just looking it up, and yeah, sure enough, so this was due to be getting a theatrical release, and then when Amazon bought MGM, it went straight onto Prime. So yeah, this was due to get a bigger response. So this is, again, some background on this. When it was sent to test audiences, it got the most positive and most enthusiastic test scores back that MGM had ever seen for a film. And I have to say, I kind of see why. So this is, so yeah, as I said, it's all based on the story from, gosh, when was it, 2018? Yes, because they talk about the World Cups, so it must have been then. And so you have basically it does it day by day. It's, you know, it starts on day one and then the floods happen and everything else. And then it has that thing that Ron Howard can do when he's given a film, like when he's given a script and when he's given the stuff he needs to make a good humanist story, is that he can get to the crux of the issue and get to, like, you know, you can see, like, it's the same thing with, like, Apollo 13 as a prime example of, you have these people trapped in an impossible situation. There's no rational, reasonable? There's no conceivable way of getting them out. And yet, you know, it's all against the clock and it's all against, like, nature itself. And he just brings that energy and that tension and that palpable that something to this film as well. So in terms of the cast, you've got Viggo Mortensen as Richard Stanton and Colin Farrell as John Valentin, who were two of the British divers who went over to Thailand as part of the rescue effort. You've also got Joel Edgerton as Richard Harris, who was the doctor who came along later and kind of devised a way to get the boys out of the cave when it came to it. And they have a really good chemistry. Like, Viggo Mortensen does this, he's basically playing like almost kind of Coventry level, like Midlands. And it's a very convincing accent, I will say this. But both, like, all three of them as the leads kind of bring this like real, like, downbeat, like, there's no way this is going to work kind of thing. And yes, it's mostly through their eyes, and a lot of it is through the people on the ground there in Thailand. And you really do get a sense of the gravity of the situation. Like, and it does focus in a lot on the families who are affected, the government officials, the engineers who are there. Basically, you see the whole mission. And there were moments when I did find myself thinking, okay, we've got an hour left. How much further can we go in this? And yet they still find a way to make it work and make it just go, okay, yeah, every little complication in this becomes just the biggest mountain to climb. And I have to say, I feel like Ron Howard has been one of those directors who has not been in the best run of form with his films lately, but man, he has really, really brought it. Like, I think this might be the best thing he's done since, easily the best thing he's done since Rush, probably the best thing he's done since Frost Nixon. It's really great. I highly recommend it. I know the running time can be off-putting, but it is, like, first of all, I would say, yeah, go and watch The Rescue. But if you're after something that really does hit home and, you know, really kind of as a piece of filmmaking, it's so well done. And as a piece of emotional storytelling, you don't get much better. You won't get much better this year, I'd say. It's really, really good. But anyway, that was 13 Lives. And I did have someone actually get in touch about this as well. So we are swimming in correspondence. So this is from Yashvant Prati, who got in touch by DM on Twitter, who said 13 Lives is an excellent thriller, worth to watch for sure. Kudos to the original team and movie team for their efforts in saving those kids. Absolutely loved it. And I have to say, yeah, nail on head there as well. My god, our correspondents are so, they're just, you know, they know what they're talking about. That's all I'm gonna say. Anyway, that was 13 Lives, and so we move on to a slightly bigger film, certainly one that came out in the cinema, which is a rarity amongst the films we're talking about this week, Bullet Train. So this is the new film from director David Leitch, him off of Deadpool 2 and Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw, among others. And so this tells the story of a mercenary, let's call him mercenary, codenamed Ladybug, played by Brad Pitt, who through circumstances beyond his control is put on a bullet train in Japan to do a smash and grab job. Before he knows it, he finds out the train is full of hitmen who are all out on different missions, but all seem to coincide and close in on his location. So, who here has had a chance to see Bullet Train?
I.
Not me.
Excellent. Okay. Right, Alex, you can carry on sitting pretty for this one. Charlotte, what did you think of Bullet Train?
I really enjoyed this. Such a great time with this one.
Okay.
Despite myself, I would say. I thought the trailer was a bit unsure of itself. Didn't really have a clear identity. I went Friday night with a mate. I had two beers. Sky Super Screen. Had a whale of a time. I thought it was really funny. I thought it was quite clever. I don't think it's the greatest film ever made. I probably will forget about it when I do my end of the year list. But in terms of... did I want to see two characters called twins, who are definitely not twins, have a monologue about Thomas the Tank Engine? Didn't know I needed it. Glad I've got it. I'm someone who does quite enjoy films that hop around timelines and have like the additions of titles and that kind of thing. So for me, it just ticked all my boxes. Thumbs up.
I think, you know what it is? I wish I'd had the beers. Now you've mentioned it. So, yeah, I didn't care for this. I wish I did. There was something about it when I was watching it. And I have to say, the two things that were pulling my attention were Brad Pitt and Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Everything else, I just found myself thinking, oh, just get on with it. There is, for me, I just felt, for a film about a really, really fast train, it takes forever to get to its destination. And funnily enough, I was thinking about you, Charlotte, when I was watching this, because all I kept thinking was, this could be half an hour shorter.
I agree with you. Although then I don't know where I'd cut. And I know, like, the last act isn't brilliant, but I really enjoyed the character interplay. That was, I think, what I enjoyed about it, and the reveals, both information and character. And I know that, like, this is the thing, right, is I fully agree with everything you say. I think it's quite arrogant. I think some of the accents are terrible. I think it's really shitty that a film that is set in Japan has a primarily Western cast. Absolutely, yeah. Western cast who then claim to be from entirely different countries with awful accents. Like, I cannot reiterate enough. And yeah, I don't know. It's action-y. It's funny. It's got... I think fundamentally it's the relying on the actor's charisma.
Although, yeah, I'd agree with that.
I did sometimes wish Brad Pitt was Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, okay.
I was watching it. Just because, you know, that Ghostbusters energy would have been really funny.
Yeah, yes. I do kind of get that, actually.
It's not... Maybe as well, maybe... like with many parts of my life, the bar is so low that I'm happy with what I'm given. But this summer hasn't provided these bangers since Top Gun 2. We've not really had... Top Gun Maverick, even.
Yeah.
We've not had those kind of all-out blockbuster films. Not the cinema, anyway. So for me to have the comedy... the violence, the action, just,
Like, it does feel like the cinematic equivalent of just kind of picking up crumbs from the table. Just kind of going, yeah, I'll take this, I suppose, thank you.
McDonald's fries are the best fries there is, you know, like, and the most places.
Yeah.
So it's like eating a McDonald's for me.
Okay.
Like, delicious. I will be hungry very soon afterwards and crave something more substantial. But in that moment, I really enjoyed it.
Right, okay. See, I will take that analogy and run it a little bit further. Is that I do love, you know, eating a McDonald's, but it just felt like about an hour in, I just realised, oh, the chips are cold.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this, you know, there's the sauce ratio is all over the place. Like, how much further is this analogy going to be tortured? No, I really wanted to like it, and I did find myself thinking, oh yeah, of course this is the guy who made Deadpool 2, of, you know, among other things. It just felt like, you know, this guy has come off of something like Atomic Blonde, which I liked a lot, and, you know, has since then done big films like Hobbs and Shaw, like Deadpool. And it just feels like, has he, I worried a little bit that he might have forgotten how to direct a little bit. Because it just felt like you have actors who know how to act. You've got, like, you've got Brad Pitt, you've got Aaron Taylor-Johnson, you've got Brian Tyree Henry and Joey King and so many other people who we can't name because it will just, you know, give the excitement away to people who want to be excited by those things. And, you know, you have a really good setup of loads of hitmen on a train. And, you know, even snakes on a train at some point. And it just felt like you have all of this stuff, and, you know, it's like being underarm thrown a really nice, easy ball when you're like playing baseball or cricket as a kid, and then just whiffing by some distance. For me, I think
it hits, but it could have hit further. I think there is more personality to it than maybe your description is giving. Like, it has got, maybe it's quirky in that very Marmite kind of sense, but it's got twists to it along the way. It isn't just people punch each other for no reason.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's the style is at least consistent. But yeah, like you say, it's got quirks, and I found that with that I had irks. Does that work?
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
But yeah, your mileage may very well vary. Like, you know, Charlotte, I can completely understand how it would be, you know, good fun, entertaining, especially after a couple of beers. And again, I wish I'd had them with me.
I do not encourage that everyone should drink before a screening of this film or any film. But if you want to, I think it's a really good Friday night film. And I think we don't often get many of those now.
That, you know what? That is fair. That is fair.
Like, imagine going into a Marvel film with two beers in and trying to work out, like, the mythology and the interlinking, because you've got, like, 27 other films prior. This one, I just had fun.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like this is the kind of film that isn't being made much anymore. And
a kind of mid-blockbuster.
Yeah, definitely. Well, mid is the word. But no, I think... Oh... Probably, oh, that's sad now. But yeah, no, I think come for the prospect of action on a train, and stay for Aaron Taylor-Johnson being an East End hitman. And Brian Tyree Henry to a similar extent, but with...
I mean, I don't know if I say East End. He's from somewhere.
He's from somewhere. Somewhere in the world has that accent, definitely.
One person.
One person. Merry old London town is where he's from. God blimey, Mary Poppins. Okay, cool. So let's step off the bullet train and let's head towards Not Okay. So this is one I haven't actually seen. So this is down to those of you that have. So Alex, I think this is one you have seen.
Indeed it is.
Lovely. Charlotte, have you had the pleasure?
Yup.
Wonderful. Okay, I'll let you two duke it out. So... Not Okay. Alex, I'm going to let you flex those vocal cords. Ooh, take it away.
That's what I've been waiting for. No, yes, so Not Okay. Directed by Quinn Shepherd, straight streaming. I think it was Hulu in America, Disney Plus over here in the UK. It follows Zoe Deutsch's character, Danny Sanders, who... the film warns you at the beginning that this is going to be an unlikable female protagonist. I believe when the trailer came out, it also gave us this warning. We talked about it, about how obnoxious that seemed at the time. But yeah, that warning is given to you at the beginning of the film again. And she's a bit of a... She's kind of coasting through life. She doesn't really get the attention that she craves. She's a bit problematic when she's interacting with her work colleagues and stuff. And she essentially gets this idea to up her kind of attention and her social media presence. So she fakes going on a trip to France. And... lo and behold, The day before she is meant to come back, in quotation marks, there is a series of terrorist attacks in Paris, where she is claiming to be. So she gets caught up in this entire massive lie, having to kind of convince everyone that that she was there and how the events have affected her and all of that kind of stuff, whilst also kind of coming to terms with the newfound attention that she wanted and is now getting because of that. I don't know about you, Charlotte, but I really liked this. I thought it was very interesting, and I feel like it has the right amount of things to say without feeling like preachy or pretentious or anything kind of like that. I think Zoe Deutsch is brilliant. When it says this is an unlikable female protagonist, boy, they are not joking. Some of the things she does in this film are like horrible, horrible things. So much so that like I would like wince at how horrible it was. Like there's some playful and kind of jokey things towards the beginning of the film, but as the lie deepens and gets further and further in, you know, the things that she has to do start getting bigger and bigger and hold more weight, and you're kind of like, no, you just stop, just tell them the truth. And she just kind of carries on going and carries on going, and even so much so as to after she has gotten some of the things that she wants, like for example getting to hook up with the guy that she fancies at work, which in any other film, once something like that has happened, and it might not be as satisfying as you thought that it would have been, the protagonist generally is like, okay, I'm gonna stop now. But Danny Sanders did not stop. There's also the film is obviously mainly surrounded by Danny's character, but there's a character played by Mia Isaac called Rowan Aldrin, who plays she's a school kid, and she meets Danny in a survivor's support group, and we find out that she is the survivor of a school shooting. And I really, really love how well handled her storyline was, and kind of the relationship that she builds up with Danny, and how that kind of feeds into each other, and how both of those kind of affect each other. And then especially when everything kind of blows up at the end, for want of a better word, just how, like, effective that is. And Mia Isaac is absolutely wonderful in this role. I believe that this is her second film. Her first film actually only came out a couple of weeks ago on Amazon Prime, I believe, with John Cho. Don't Make Me Go.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know, Charlotte, you said you weren't fond of.
But there's a thing, yeah.
There's a thing. But I haven't seen that, but from her performance in this, I think she's one to look out for. She's truly brilliant. And finally, before I pass to you, Charlotte, I think from my perspective, or at least what I kind of thought about this, is that like there kind of is and isn't. I think the message of this film is that there isn't a message, because I think outside of Zoe Deutsch's character, absolutely nothing changes. And even though, you know, Zoe Deutsch's character goes through what she goes through towards the end of the film, you know, society just keeps ticking on and is horrible and terrible. And it's like so true to real life. I also thought, I also kind of like how interesting it is that the main character is a woman, because of how she is treated when people find out that she's lying, and how she's kind of completely vilified by the online community. And kind of, you kind of wonder how it would be if it was a man. And it's easy to draw comparisons to Andrew Tate, who is currently on the lips of many people, who is a complete and utter horrible person, who is currently still, like, you know, has still got a platform, and people aren't, you know, out here being all like sending him death threats and all that kind of stuff. So I think that there's something really interesting to say in that dynamic as well.
I saw someone do a comparison with Dear Evan Hansen for this film.
Yeah.
I can kind of see, actually. What I enjoyed about this film, hearing you talk about it, made me sort of really appreciate the film neither condemns or endorses her behaviour.
Mm.
It's very kind of matter of fact in how it's done. At times, my cringometer just couldn't handle some of the things I was seeing. Like, it made me feel just awful, like toe-curling awful, how she manipulates the situation to her advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then that's sort of countered by how realistic it all feels, and the idea of how influencer culture has kind of infiltrated people, both in how we consume media and how we view these influencers, but also how some of these influencers or wannabe influencers view their lives.
Yeah.
As a commodity that they can promote, and a kind of lifestyle that isn't really living. I really enjoyed Dylan O'Brien for that reason, because his character is awful. Like, he's an awful human being, an awful love interest. And there is, the film's exploration of redemption is really uncliched. I found it quite refreshing how the film deals with that last arc.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
And the kind of growth for one way. It's an interesting film. I don't know if I will ever watch it again. It's not like a feel-good classic, but it's an interesting look at something that, like I've said before on here, time again, about how I've been consuming podcasts and documentaries on con men and influencers and scams, that kind of thing. And it's interesting to see that reflected really successfully in a fiction text, because it could easily have been awfully done, this millennial condemnation, but instead it strikes a really nice balance.
Yeah, and I think you're right about the cringe moments. I genuinely not sure I can go through watching the scene where Dylan O'Brien is lighting up his super his super joint. Just quite something. I think one more thing I wanted to say is that I think as well, it was very good that it gave the final word to, in all of the, in what the story is, the person that matters the most. Because it so very easily could have, like you said, given Danny Sanders a redemption arc, and it could have ended with her being all happy and hunky-dory and all of that kind of stuff, but it doesn't do that. And, the film ends with Mia Isaac's character doing a really beautifully written monologue. And it is just, I think a really nice way to tie it all up.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. It's on my list to watch. So from that, I am enthused even more so. So thank you for that, guys. But that does bring us to the end of our review section.
Woo!
All right, we made it. So, as becoming increasingly custom on Jumpcast, I'm going to end things with a fun little game. So, it's quite a simple premise, and it's one that's been done many, many times over, but, you know, since when was originality anything that we championed here on Jumpcast? No, so... Okay, so it's quite simple. What I've done is I've got... So this is a best of five. And what's going to happen is, it's going to be a head-to-head between you two guys. So before I lay out what's going to happen, I need to figure out what you're going to say or shout to kind of signify that you're going to answer. Do you just want to do it by names, or do you want to...
We have to shout our own names.
Do you want to shout your own names, or do you can? You need to shout something, so...
I'm going to shout Bazinga.
Awooga.
Wonderful. Okay, that was easier. You know what? That was much more straightforward. Okay, so the game is even more challenging than that. So, okay.
Bazinga, yeah, I win!
no. Okay, so what's going to happen is I have gone through IMDb for 5 films and I have picked out some of the keywords for these films.
Bloody hell.
Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to list off these keywords. As soon as you know what the film is, or if you think you know what the film is, buzz in or yell in with your noise. I'll let you try and answer it. If you're right, it's a point to you. And this is the best of 5. So we might not need all of these, but I've got them. So, if we're ready.
Mm-hmm. Ready as I'll ever be.
Wonderful. Okay, so the first film, these are the keywords. Man with a ponytail. Beaten to death. Swarm of bees. Wilhelm scream. Climbing a tree. Bloody body of a child. Gladiator. Starving. Volunteer. Post-apocalypse. Teenage girl. Televised.
A woo girl?
Charlotte.
I'm not confident in this. I'm just going for... I went for Interstellar, but I don't think that's right.
No. Oh, I got it.
It's not Interstellar. Alex could steal it. Go on.
The Hunger Games?
It is The Hunger Games.
Yeah!
Ponytail.
The last two were going to be televised in game.
Oh.
Yeah, post-apocalypse right. Did it. And then I went back round to Man with a Ponytail and was like, yep, Caesar. Yeah.
Is that him? Oh, Caesar.
Yeah,
some of these will be direct and some of these will be like, huh?
So just, yeah, Man with a Ponytail, that really narrows it down.
Yeah, yeah. See, these are great. Okay, cool. So, film number 2. And Alex, you are 1-0 up currently. Okay. Raised middle finger. Memory. Barista. Non-linear timeline.
A bazinga.
Alex?
Oh, I feel like I fucked this one. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
It's not. Oh. So, Charlotte, as soon as you think you know it, just yell.
No.
Aruga? Okay.
Go on.
It's not The Hangover, is it?
It's not, no.
Okay, I think I'm going to guess, so, but I'm going to hear a few more words before. Wait, okay. Or does that like cancel it so out now you both guessed?
No. Now you both got it. Now you both had a go and got it wrong. I'm going to let you both have another try. So I'm going to carry on.
Okay.
Okay. So, biting lip, lens flare, woman wears a red dress, climbing out of a swimming pool, dream girl, intertitle shows passage of time, jumping into a river, singing, dancing on the top of a car.
Bazinga.
Oh, Alex just got there. Go on.
La La Land?
It is La La Land. Okay.
I nearly went New Moon, so good I didn't answer.
Oh.
I was thinking 500 Days of Summer, because I don't know why, but then obviously it did.
When is there a red dress?
I think Emma
she does Stone's wear a red dress to the party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where we see absolutely impeccable period dressed Ryan Gosling.
Yes. Yeah.
And
oh man, what a film. Okay, right, so film number 3. So this could be for Alex for the win or Charlotte for a point. So character repeating someone else's dialogue. Falling downstairs. Title spoken by character. Girl. Severe tire damage. IKEA. Old dark house. Man sits on a toilet.
Aruga?
Yep.
Fight Club?
We shouldn't talk about it, but it is Fight Club.
Very good. I would never have got that.
IKEA.
Yep. So the remaining ones were baggage claim, reference to Mahatma Gandhi, drinking beer, acid, and nihilism. I feel like nihilism might have clinched it. So
when you said falling down the stairs, I nearly buzzed in and said Glee.
But because you were clearly pushed. So I know Sylvester says she wasn't there and didn't see anything, but come on. Okay, so right, film number 4. And again, this could be Alex for the win or Charlotte to take it into a tiebreaker.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Unrequited love. Black female judge. Dinner date. costume party, prison visit, situational depression, reference to Ricky Martin, delivery man, ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend relationship, what happened to epilogue, adapted into play or musical, German car, manicurist.
Ooga.
Charlotte.
Legally Blonde?
Oh, it's to a tie break. It was Legally Blonde. So, yes, very well done.
Okay.
I'm so glad this went to the full five, you know? I'm really pleased how this worked out. Okay, so this is the tiebreaker one. This one for the win.
Okay.
Journal. Finger gun. Dysfunctional relationship. Elevator. Nosebleed. Looking at oneself in the mirror. Female psychiatrist. Orphan. Strike. Television. Rat. Loss of control. Green hair. Who's it going to be?
No, I can't get it.
No.
I can go through the list again.
Go on, one more time, but I don't
one
think.
More time. Okay. Journal. Finger gun. Dysfunctional relationship. Elevator. Nosebleed. Looking at oneself in the mirror. Female psychiatrist. Orphan. Strike. Television. Rat. Loss of control. Green hair.
Bazinga.
Alex.
If it is this, I'm not going to say the swear word. Is it Joker?
It is Joker. And that is 3 points to two.
It's Alex. Absolutely so telling that all of those words, when you know that it's Joker, make absolute sense.
I also worry that reading this out loud on the podcast, in fact, all this list, I feel like I might have activated someone.
but yeah, not knowing, like, it just is a incoherent mess.
Like the film.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey. Wow. Well, congratulations, Alex. You clinched that one with your favourite film.
Thank you.
Commiserations, Charlotte. That was well played, though.
Thank you. Coming back
from 2-0 to bring that to a decider was very well done. And yes, if we do find out that a government has been toppled or anything like that, it wasn't my fault, okay? I just picked these keywords at random.
Winter Soldier style activate on the incel.
Oh no.
There's just a Reddit subreddit somewhere just blowing up. Joker is the best film ever. It depicts everything about a man's experience so well.
Oh god, what have we wrought? We'll have to find out next week when we will be talking about such films, including Jordan Peele's Nope, which I have seen. I know. And I'm going to give a one-word review before we go in depth on it next week.
Is it yep?
Yep.
Oh, I knew what it's going to be.
Come on, again, since when have we been paragons of originality on this? I am very excited to hear what Alex and Charlotte have to say about Nope when they get the chance. And we also have Lal Singh Chadha, which I am also very excited for. That is the remake of Forrest Gump. But all of those and more will come in the next Jumpcast. But for now, and high off the buzz of that fun little game that I hope was good, Alex, thank you so much and have a good week.
Thank you very much.
And Charlotte, the same to you.
Thank you very much. Stay sexy.
Wonderful. We will do our best on that front. You too as well, of course, listeners, and we will catch you next week for more Jumpcast.